Chapter 5. Go Deeper, Be Better. Up to this point of the book, we've talked about initial impressions, storytelling, and how you should generally approach people to bypass small talk. Let's focus a bit more now on how to really get to that next level of closeness with someone. It's not as hard as you might imagine, but it may require some tweaking of the way you currently interact with people. This is more or less a chapter on how to get into someone's good graces. We will first talk about compliments, a more obvious method, while the other sections cover imparting comfort, safety, and ease. Some of this might seem simple or obvious, but it's still not being put to good use by most of us. The oldest trick in the book. Certainly one of the easiest ways to get into someone's good graces is to compliment quickly and freely. This is ground zero for flattery and making people light up with a smile. If you think about it, you probably have positive thoughts about people running through your head all day, so there's no reason not to simply give voice to them. We just tend to fixate on sneer-worthy aspects more than we like. Within the world of compliments, there are two levels that I want to differentiate between. The first level is the low-hanging fruit. There are only so many times someone can hear that they have nice eyes and still be impacted by it. This level is what most people are stuck on. They're more likely to be simple observations rather than in-depth statements. You'll know the difference between the two types of compliments by the impact they have on the person. Eyes are great, but it's something rather shallow to point out. There are only so many times you can hear that you have nice eyes and still care. How do you give compliments that are more thoughtful and less superficial? The second level of compliment goes below the surface. For maximum impact, compliment people for two things besides the obvious and superficial. Compliment people on, 1, things they have control over, and 2, things they have made a conscious choice about. There may be significant overlap between the two. For instance, no one has control over the color of their eyes. Thus, it is not a very impactful compliment. However, someone may have made a very conscious choice to wear a specific hairstyle that takes an hour to get ready. Other examples include specific habits, words, and phrases people use, distinct fashion sense, unique thoughts, and so on. Why are these aspects so much more personal and impactful to compliment? Because they reflect the person's thought processes and identity. These are choices people consciously make to represent themselves, their tastes and values. They don't do it for others, but they are hoping to be judged positively and lauded for their choices. The more outrageous something might be, the more valuable positive confirmation is. Therefore, when you compliment someone on their choices and thoughts, you validate them to the highest degree. You're telling them that you agree with them, it was all worth it, and they made the right choice. You can see that complimenting a person on something they don't have control over, such as their eye color, doesn't amount to much other than, "Hey, congratulations on winning the genetic lottery with your eyes." Now, if this person was wearing colored contacts, it might be a better compliment because that's obviously a choice they made to alter their original eye color. Compliment things your conversation partner has obviously put some thought into. This might include a bright shirt, a distinctive handbag, an unusual piece of art, or a vintage car. These things are out of the ordinary, uncommon, and reflect a deliberate deviation from the norm. You never know if someone's persona is ingrained in the fact that they choose to wear Hawaiian shirts. By complimenting someone on something they've clearly chosen with purpose, you acknowledge and validate the statement they have chosen to make about themselves. Other things you can compliment people on that show individual choice are their manners, the way they phrase certain ideas, their opinions, their worldview, and their perspective. Above all else, compliments trigger one of the most fundamental weaknesses humans have. We are starved for attention. We like to be put in the spotlight and given the attention that we feel we deserve. People aren't really complimented that much on a daily basis, especially men. We can easily see this because most people don't know how to take a true and genuine compliment without a bit of awkward fumbling. Make it a goal to see people fumble about the compliments you give them. This means it impacts them more because they simply don't get many, and it will have a greater effect on your relationship. On a related matter, try to make it a habit to notice, point out, and celebrate people's idiosyncrasies. Everyone has their own sort of either mental, emotional, or physical traits that make them uniquely them, and these can take unlimited forms. You might think that these idiosyncrasies are things that people want to hide and conceal from others, but here's the surprise. When you notice, point them out, and celebrate them, they'll love you for it. In the context of conversation, it's going to be things like their mannerisms, tics, gestures, body language, vocabulary, unique phrasing, or even how they cross their legs. There's a multitude of other possibilities. You just have to make sure that you frame it in a unique, positive, and fascinated light. For instance, everyone has a different physical ritual they engage in, mostly subconsciously, when they speak to others. If it's not a physical ritual during conversation, everyone has different ways they perceive and go about their day. Some people will chew 50 times for each mouthful of food. Others will avoid touching doorknobs when opening doors, and some might avoid stepping on cracks in the sidewalk for fun. Once you've observed the same idiosyncrasy at least a few times to make sure it's not because of a mosquito or some other environmental factor, draw attention to it. Not in a negative manner, but in an observant one. Hey, that's an interesting way of tying your shoes. I see that you keep twisting the jars into patterns. Tell me about that. Do you favor your left arm? You crack it 5 times every time we walk outside. Did you read 1984 recently? You use the word good plus a lot. Make sure that you don't have any judgmental tone in your voice or body language when you point out an idiosyncrasy. You're not calling them out. It's not negative. You're just shining the spotlight on something that is personal to them that they thought people might not notice. But you did notice. The fact that you did will make them feel special because you've apparently paid so much attention to them. To continue with the above examples, what do you imagine the response will be? Very likely pleasant shock and a compulsion to open up and elaborate themselves to you. Next, we turn to something that should be so fundamental as to be taught in school from childhood, and yet, 2 ears, 1 mouth. Raise your hand if this has ever happened to you. You're speaking with someone, and immediately after you've finished speaking, they ignored absolutely everything you said, didn't even acknowledge it, and continued on a completely unrelated thought or tangent. It's as if they didn't hear a word of what you said, and they probably didn't. Can you imagine this happening during a theater performance? Actor number 1. I want to go to the butcher shop now, so let's go. Actor number 2. This table is fascinating. Do you think it was made in Germany? Actor number 1. So back to that butcher shop. Actor number 1 would be left confused and scrambling. Unfortunately, if we're honest with ourselves, this type of interaction is common and happens often. For all of our good intentions, most people are terrible listeners, us included, and it impacts the quality of our relationships. People want to say what they want to say, and they are more interested in their own lives than anyone else's. To most, on an unconscious level, sharing is caring, not listening. This is normal human nature, but that doesn't mean it's best for us. Good habits, such as self-discipline, willpower, and focusing on others, explicitly goes against our built-in instincts, so it can take some undoing. Conversation is a two-way street, and you have to give the other person space to speak in order to receive it for yourself. Unfortunately, many people, hopefully not you, see conversation as a dumping ground. This will happen in one of two ways. People will either come in with a fixed agenda and set of talking points, or they'll be so wrapped up in their own lives that they just want to share with you and not hear about yours. In either case, they open their mouths, unload information, and don't stop until they get tired of their own voices. How does this make the listener feel? People aren't dumb. People can detect when you are engaged and interested in what they have to say. They will get the distinct feeling that the other person is just waiting for their turn to speak and is not interested in anything they have to say. It's like they know they're doing their best to try to listen to you, but they feel that their lives are so much more captivating that they can't resist going back to that topic. The listeners are not getting much out of the exchange, and at some point, only listening to someone and having your prompts ignored is burdensome and flat-out annoying. In a theater performance, the two parties won't be working together, and the scene will be disjointed, as one person will have to keep catering to the other person's whims. Silence is an effective communication tool. Use it more frequently than you think you should. If anyone you engage with answers your questions happily but doesn't pause to ask how you're doing, then they need to shut up more. If that's you, you're the one who needs to shut up. It can be difficult because sometimes we build up a lot of steam during conversations. We feel like we're on a roll with what we're talking about, and we could keep going for hours. That's a selfish pursuit, and if someone wants to hog the spotlight for a while, you must absolutely surrender it and be willing to derail yourself and jump completely into someone else's ideas and topics. Therefore, in conversation, one of the first keys is that you don't just wait for your turn to speak. To some, this sounds like, let people speak and don't interrupt them, but it goes deeper than that. This actually means to empty your mind and stop composing your response or the next topic while someone is speaking. When you are listening, you aren't only waiting for your turn to speak and preparing for that. You're listening with a blank slate and then tailoring your response directly to what was just said. Wherever the other person wants to derail the conversation, you must be willing to go with them. That's great listening and a showing of respect. If you are letting the other person speak simply because you feel like you shouldn't be talking for so long at one stretch, you're just waiting for your turn to speak. You aren't participating in the conversation. You're giving a monologue in the hopes that the other person contributes and listens to it. Or worse yet, the other person listens in a similar fashion to you, and you're in a case of dueling monologues versus a dialogue. Even more seriously, you are not respecting your conversation partner. Your behavior tells them you do not value them enough to listen while you're waiting for your turn to unload what you have to say. Much of this is subconscious, so it would be wrong to say that we're malicious in our daily conversations. We sometimes get too eager to talk about ourselves because our lives are most interesting to us, so why wouldn't they be to others? We're like puppies discovering snow for the first time and are unable to contain our excitement. We already had an example of poor listening earlier, that damn butcher shop. However, it was egregious, and most examples of poor listening are subtler, and you may not even realize they are a problem. They might merely be classified as ineffective. Ineffective listening. Bob. I heard that butcher shop is pretty good. Johnson. Oh, cool. Where is it? Bob. About a 10-minute walk. Johnson. Oh, I see. Did I tell you about my new niece? Bob. No, you didn't. Congratulations. Johnson. She's really cute. Here are some pictures. The reason this is ineffective listening is because Johnson merely pays lip service to Bob's interests before being unable to contain himself from talking about his niece. He doesn't see Bob's thought to completion and cuts him off in the middle to shift to his own topic. This is the type of poor listening that we encounter more on a daily basis. It's subtle, but sometimes it's just as bad. Here's that conversation, but with better listening. Bob, I heard that butcher shop is pretty good. Johnson, oh, cool. Where is it? Bob, about a 10-minute walk. Johnson, oh, I see. Did you want to check it out? Bob, I do. Do you want to come with me? Johnson, sure. Along the way, I can show you pictures of my new niece. Both parties are able to wedge their thoughts in. Conversation that improves relationships and makes people feel positive about each other involves an interplay between silence and speaking, and both parties have an equal opportunity to take the spotlight. Collaboration is the name of the game, and waiting for your turn to speak doesn't contribute to a shared goal, only yours. Interrupting, of course, is also a no-no in the quest for better listening. Interrupting sends the message of, "I know you were talking, but what I have to say is more interesting for both of us," or, "What I'm saying is more important than what you say." Again, it's not conscious, but that's what happens when we put our thoughts and agendas over those of other people. You might not think it's a big deal, but if you keep interrupting, that is precisely the message you send. Your conversation partner doesn't know what's going on inside your head, so who can blame them for feeling alienated if your actions don't represent your intentions? Here are a few quick guidelines for interruptions. First, don't interrupt others unless you agree with them so emphatically that you can finish their sentence with them. Second, if you do interrupt them for any reason, ask them immediately after you finish speaking what they were saying and bring it back to them. Acknowledge your error and quickly put the spotlight back onto them. Third, try to abide by the 2-second rule to police yourself. After someone finishes speaking, pause for a full 2 seconds while contemplating what they've said and externally demonstrate that you are analyzing their words. Then, and only then, may you reply. This will get you into the habit of thinking before speaking and addressing people first. You can also get into the habit of using phrases that encourage others to keep speaking. It's not always enough to just shut up and nod your head. Staring blankly at someone will make people feel like they have to repeat themselves and that their message didn't get through. It has the same exact effect as not listening to them. You have to demonstrate that you are mentally following every step of the conversation, even if you aren't. Use your facial expressions, eyebrows, gestures, and laughs to signal a reaction to each of their statements. Nod when they emphasize a point. Here are some encouraging phrases to show interest and investment.
Uh-huh.
I see. That's interesting. Tell me more. And then? What happened next? What about that? If you look at conversations as simply an exercise to be heard and shine a spotlight on your ego, you're doing a great disservice to everyone you engage with. Not everyone is as interested in your life as you are. Even if you think you're listening and shutting up sufficiently, there's a chance that you still cling to your train of thought subconsciously and are waiting for the opportunity to assert it. To improve your conversations and connect better, you need to shut up more. As the old saying goes, you can't learn when you're speaking. Though it may not seem that way at first, listening is actually one of the most self-interested things you can do, because you are the person who benefits and learns. It's a complete win-win situation. To see the simple power of shutting up more, make your next conversation with a friend all about them. Try to find out about every minute detail of their day. This means you shutting up, listening to them, reacting accordingly, and asking questions that go deeper. Say as little as you can while reacting properly and moving the conversation along in whatever direction they want. Make it as unbalanced an exchange as possible. Don't interrupt them. And try to coax as many stories from them as you can. Note how willing they are to speak about themselves in detail. Is this easy or difficult for you? Did it feel unnatural to ask people deeply about their day and focus on them? If it did, then you just might need to practice shutting up more. By the way, much of what we've discussed regarding listening thus far is about how to resist your selfish tendencies to seize the spotlight and share to your heart's content. But if you have that tendency, so does the person across from you. Step aside and give them the chance to be selfish in an effort to better your communication. Think about how you feel after you leave a conversation where you don't share much. You probably feel neglected, suppressed, and like it was a negative experience because you weren't able to add your thoughts. Now, imagine a scenario where you were given all the airspace you could use and had a captive audience. You'd come away feeling good because you were able to articulate the subtleties of your thoughts. You know how good it feels to express and explain yourself, so don't rob others of that same experience. Make people feel like you care and they matter. Giving people the spotlight is an entirely different thing from making sure people know they have the spotlight. You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in you. Dale Carnegie. Ask better questions. Finally, when it comes to going deeper, there's one certain way to do it, by wielding questions as shovels. Unfortunately, most questions we use just don't get anywhere. They're more of hammers and saws, which are not so well suited for digging deeper. Some of them are made lazily, which prompts lazy answers in return. Others are plain confusing or meandering and without a clear purpose. Most of them aren't geared at looking beneath the surface and understanding people. Good questions help both parties develop deeper communication. Well-constructed inquiries can prompt a respondent to find new ways to think about their situations, which strengthens trust and keeps communication fresh. Thankfully, asking good questions is a practice that's completely within your power. Recall in the beginning of the book, we discussed researchers Arthur Aaron's 1997 study on personal questions fostering feelings of closeness. Although the questions were not offensively intrusive, they were more than just small talk. Would you like to be famous and how? Do you have a secret hunch about how you'll die? What is your most terrible memory? How do you feel about your relationship with your mother? Aaron's findings were clear. Going more deeply or intensely in our communications can create positive results far more swiftly than one might think. Coming up with effective questions isn't necessarily a reflexive act that we can do on the fly. To elicit more revealing answers that build depth and improve intimate relationships, here are 6 strategies that can be of great help in digging deep and learning about people. These are most definitely not small talk questions. 1. Ask open-ended questions. Questions that require only yes or no answers will usually produce nothing more than yes or no answers. If the question contains no prompt for the responder to elaborate, there's a very good chance they won't. Open-ended questions, though, can spark discussions and bring up new, revelatory understandings that binary questions don't encourage. For example, instead of asking, "Are you satisfied with your relationship with your mother?" you could ask, "Why is your relationship with your mother the way it is? How did it get that way?" These types of questions always seek to find reasons, stories, emotions, and patterns of thought. They're not asking for simple information in the form of facts. They're looking for the analysis and reaction before and after the fact. 2. Get behind assumptions. We all operate through our own personal experiences, knowledge, and assumptions. You know what you know. Good communication involves understanding someone else's beliefs. When they speak about issues that are unfamiliar to us, we ask them to explain what they mean, what they believe, or what assumptions they bring to the situation. Well-worded questions can bridge that gap. How did you come to that conclusion? What makes this particular situation different than normal? What gave you this idea? What's the story behind your belief? When you sense a gap between what your partner is saying and what you're familiar with, that's the time to get clarity on what they're basing their statements on. This is a prime mindset to learn more about the world and people other than yourself. After all, you can't assume that only your assumptions and beliefs are reasonable. Everyone else's are, to some degree. So, what is it that you are missing? 3. Get all sides of the story. There are very few situations in life that are uncomplicated, cut and dried, or black and white. No matter how strongly someone feels about their particular viewpoint, there's always more than one side to a given story. By getting as much information as we possibly can about a certain topic, we delve deeper and understand more about the total nature of a situation, problem, or event. This is often a case of not shutting out opinions or beliefs that might threaten or offend us, which, in this day, can be very difficult to do. But a responsibly asked question will help get a better picture of the greater context of things and will allow us to understand matters beyond our own limited view. Is there another perspective on this situation? What are some of the things someone who disagrees with you would say? What would happen if someone did this differently? In general, don't be satisfied that you've gotten absolutely every fact of a certain matter to make an informed assumption. 4. Ask follow-up questions. When we're trying to get close to someone, a lot of the questions we may ask of them don't have easy answers. In fact, if we were writing them out, they'd probably be more like 2- or 3-part questions with room to elaborate. In personal interactions, we can emulate that depth and show the strength of our focus by asking follow-up questions. But they don't have to come immediately after your partner's answered. One author, me, suggests seeing how many questions you can ask in a row without offering any comment of your own, so you can allow your partner to expand their response and keep digging deeper. It's very important not to sound too much like a journalist or an inquisitor when asking follow-up questions. Instead, try to link your respondent's answers to things they've already discussed. What you just mentioned about not fully understanding computer technology reminds me of what you said about not doing well in school. How do those relate? Or, how did that breakup affect your views on relationships? Good follow-up questions will make you sound invested in your partner's response, and it may take a while for you to get to the answers you both need to know. But that's more time spent communicating. 5. Get comfortable with dead air. People tend to be scared to death of awkward silences, those moments in conversation when there's a pregnant pause and nobody says anything. We tend to misinterpret these silences as a sign that either we or our partner has run out of things to say. Sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's someone trying to gauge you and subtly seek permission to keep talking. Thus, silence can work in communication's favor. When you're at ease with silence and don't rush to fill it yourself with inane chatter, you'll be prompting other people to speak more and more. Think of it as seeing if moments of silence can help them generate their own new thoughts and allow the conversation to get to a deeper level. This is perhaps the easiest part of digging deeper. Give people the space to do it for themselves instead of at your asking. 6. Encourage your partner to come up with their own insights. The best kinds of question and answer sessions aren't just one way, with one person providing insight and information to the other. It's always best, and far more conducive to good communication, when everyone's learning new things. Questions that encourage self-discovery are, without exception, far more productive than questions that originate from a specific point of view. What did you learn from that experience navigating the Amazon River? What do you think it added to your life? Or perhaps, what would you want to say to your father if he were still alive? Like all questions, those intended to promote self-discovery need to be carefully considered. You never want to sound like you're on an inquisition, and it's easy to fall into that trap without trying. Especially with interpersonal relationships, you need to strike that balance of getting information while being supportive. If that strikes you as being too accommodating to someone's feelings, well, maybe personal relationships just aren't for you. Fortunately, going deep doesn't necessarily have to be so direct as asking, What is your deepest fantasy and wildest dream? Even the techniques we just discussed about asking questions aren't always applicable or helpful. As important as that step is, it can be exhausting. It can also be exhaustive. Theoretically, once you've talked about events and subjects only pertinent to your own lives, you'll run out of things to discover about yourself and the other person. There are only so many high school proms, parental arguments, complicated work scenarios, and family reunions you'll get in one life. In the worst-case scenario, it will turn into a job interview gone awry. We are, of course, generally disposed to talk about ourselves and the things we've directly experienced or shared, but there's a considerable amount of insight to be obtained by discussing subjects and events external to your life. Author Daniel Menaker straightforwardly calls this approach turning the conversation toward third things, not me, not them, but something else. It's not about you or the other person in particular. It's just about something external, even as benign as the news of the day or the types of ferns you're surrounded by. Call it upgraded small talk. Talking about these external topics serves as an inroad to discovering how somebody thinks and what they value. All this requires is that you ask how people feel about or would react to certain events, things, or situations. If you directly ask someone personal details about themselves, their answers are often flat or inadequate. Imagine someone, other than the therapist, asking, "Tell me about when you feel angry," or "What do you believe in?" In addition to just sounding like left-field questions, they're not likely to elicit very lucid responses. Some might find the inquiries a bit intrusive or nosy, especially in the early stages of a friendship or interaction. When you bring things up that are happening in the world, you actually get answers to those questions through others' reactions to those external situations. Their opinions and feedback offers clues to the way they really are without feeling on the spot or awkward. Discussing external things can help you get a more complete picture of what makes up the person you're with, and this is exceptionally helpful because there's no limit to what you can talk about. For an example of the type of deeper information you can glean indirectly, consider asking someone, "Where do you get your news? What kind of publications do you read most of the time?" It's an innocent question, and it's something external. You can learn much about someone's views, preferences, values, and overall worldview by knowing their reference sources and preferred viewpoints. This is useful far beyond any political purpose. You immediately understand how someone likes to see the world when you know what media they tend to consume. Instead of digging deep directly, which is often off-putting or awkward at best, you can obtain a deeper perspective by measuring people's reactions to external things. You often get a more honest answer, and you'll learn more about them in the process. Asking questions. Not only does it take away your responsibility to talk all the time and help you find common ground with your conversational partner, but it also makes the other person feel like you care about them. Asking a question helps them see that their opinions and experiences matter to you, which makes them feel important. The secret sauce is simple. Just ask questions and pay close attention to people's answers. Takeaways. Going deeper and getting better. This is about how we can enter into the type of interactions that we know are more beneficial for our happiness and mental well-being. How can we get into someone's good graces and let them feel good enough about us to let their guards down and build an actual relationship? The most obvious way to have people lower their guards is to pay them compliments, early and often. Compliments are positive in general, but there are specific compliments that really impact the recipients. You should seek to compliment people on things they have made a conscious choice about and that reflect their thinking process. This gives them validation in a way that complimenting them on their eyes simply doesn't do. These types of compliments subtly tell others that you agree with them on deep levels, and they can feel great that they have made a correct set of decisions. Sometimes people will lower their guards without even intending to, if they find a kind ear that's willing to listen intently and let them voice their inner thoughts. Listening is a skill that should be taught from childhood, but it's not. So we're left with all sorts of ineffective listening habits. We are all also naturally self-absorbed, which highlights the importance of listening as a skill to make others feel good about an interaction. While there are various methods to listen better, having a listening mindset is by far the most important part. It's not about you. Focus on the other person, and if they said something, there's a reason. Explore that. Of course, the tried and true way of directly getting deeper with people is to ask better questions. The simple truth is that most questions we use are surface level, and thus will only return surface level responses. Here are a few guidelines for more piercing questions that will create more fertile ground for real substance. Ask open-ended questions. Don't ask for facts. Ask for the analysis and reaction associated with the facts. Go beyond assumptions. What are you missing in your own analysis? Get all sides of the story. The more perspectives, the better. Use follow-up questions. Don't interject your own thoughts. Get comfortable with dead air and, in fact, utilize it and encourage people to come up with their own thoughts. So, how did that change your opinion on things?